So I'm going to talk about principles of external fixation. Now, it's kind of a basic topic. You hear about it in the AO Principles course. It's in one of the first few chapters in Rockwood and Green and Skeletal Trauma. We talk about it in Trauma Conference a little bit. So hopefully you're familiar with this, but it's important, and I think it's a topic worth briefly reviewing. So keep in mind again, what we're talking about mostly is adult trauma stuff. You're going to see external fixators used for deformity correction, Trainers and elsewhere, but many of the principles apply there as well. But what I'll be mostly referring to is adult trauma use of external fixators. Now, keep in mind, a lot of what you guys see, and I think you'll agree with this, is provisional fixation, right? Joint spanning X fixes, like a pilon fracture, plateau fracture, or something that needs to get out to length. So if you think about it, a lot of external fixation you see is really just portable traction. And that's a very common use for it. But a lot of times external fixator can be used as a definitive treatment as well. And sometimes the principles of external fixation become even more important in those cases. So one of the big things you need to know about external fixators are what make them more stable, what make them less stable, right? And these are sort of textbook topics that you can certainly review. But I think many of the components that you need to be aware of are worth reviewing here as well. So number one, you can increase stability by increasing the number of pins, right? By increasing the size of the pins, by bringing the bars closer to the skin and therefore the bone, increasing the spread of your pins. And what I mean by that is that if you have a mid-shaft tibia fracture, that instead of placing two pins an inch apart in the proximal segment and two pins an inch apart in the distal segment, it would be a lot more stable to spread the pins in each segment, in each fragment, by a big distance. Because when the pins come really, really close to each other, they're almost acting like one pin, right? So spread of the pins is really important. Now, keep in mind, spread of the pins may not be that great if you're doing a provisional fixator, right? So a lot of times, guys get in there, residents, they want to sort of say, well, we got to make this really, really stable. They know their external fixator principles, but you're doing a provisional fixator. And by spreading your pins, you put a pin that's really close to the fracture site in something that you're about to plate in a week. Probably not a good idea. You want to think about why you're doing this. Is it portable traction? Is it provisional? Or are you trying to make something really stable? And occasionally you'll see this. We'll have a tibia fracture. Maybe that we're absolutely going to use external fixator as definitive management. And we may then have to change a provisional fixator in order to make something stable. Other things to increase stability. Bone contact, right? So if you can, get the bone ends, the contact, key in even better, compress them even better, you're going to increase your stability tremendously. What else? I mentioned quite a few things. Increase the number of pins, size of pins, bars closer to the bone, number of bars. Certainly can increase your stability as well. And then multiple planes, right? So a multi-planar fixator. If you think about a ring fixator with pins in multiple planes, that's potentially more stable than a unilateral bar fixator. With fixators that we use, you notice there are all these bars and clamps, and sometimes we have to use multiple bars and clamps in between to sort of span an area we're dealing with. Well, that actually is less stable. If you can use one bar as opposed to having that additional joint in the middle with another clamp in the middle, that one bar is more stable. It's less modular, less moving parts, even though you lock them down. So when you have an opportunity, that's what you would like to do if you want it to be more stable. So I think a very simple example is if you have a mid-shaft tibia fracture that you need to do definitive X fix for. Let's say it's an open tibia, you need to IND it. The patient has almost no canal diameter because of some bone disease. This is the patient I had recently. So you do a definitive external fixator, right? And what you do is you actually space the pins out in each fragment, right? So near, near, far, far. And if you do it in such a way, you know, that you're careful and shoot the pins off the frame, you can basically pretty much use like one bar coming down across both fragments, across all four pins, and you can double stack it with another bar. But you know, that is a really stable construct. That patient potentially can walk on that once it's, you know, starts to heal in. So let's talk about ring fixators a little bit. I mentioned that ring fixators are a form of multi-plane fixation, and these add an additional layer of stability. In fact, you will see us use ring fixators, especially in the tibia, for definitive stabilization, especially periarticular fractures and occasionally diaphyseal fractures. Things to keep in mind when you are using rings are that pin spread in the ring is important. So if you think about a ring or sort of two-thirds ring in the proximal tibia, if you just put pins transversely across the tibia, like thin wire pins, and I'm talking about thin wires here, if I just put transverse pins directly across, place maybe a couple of them, they will act as one pin, sort of. That is, when you flex and extend the knee, the tibia can kind of sort of rotate like a spindle almost. Therefore, what we look for is spread of the pins, meaning like you don't want to have the pins at sort of a obtuse angle. You want to bring them almost closer to a 90-degree angle to the point that, you know, you're at least still safe, right? You can't like go behind the fibula and get the peroneal nerve, but you want to sort of have sort of that angle, you know, such that the pins are spread out in that proximal tibia, and the same thing in the distal tibia, you know. So something easier shown with a drawing, but for those of you who are a little bit familiar, hopefully you understand what I'm talking about. So I think those are some of the major principles you need to be aware of. Keep in mind that stability is not always, you know, or I should say maximum stability is not always what you want. As a matter of fact, you can make an external fixator construct too rigid, in which case you will not get any callus formation, and sometimes you end up having to dynamize the fixator just to get the bone to heal. And you guys don't see this a lot because we don't do a lot of definitive fixators anymore, but keep in mind, more stability is not always what you want. And another thing to keep in mind is external fixators, and this is sort of a side note, but external fixators are very expensive. You would have no idea how much these fixators can cost. I mean, bars and clamps, they cost hundreds of dollars each. So just to put on some knee-spanning fixator with a whole bunch of parts and, you know, clamps in between and multi-pin clamps, it can easily rack up, you know, a few thousands of dollars. So keep that in mind. You know, I think it's worth mentioning. You should understand, you know, where you go to practice, you may want to, you know, find out, you know, how much these things are costing, because at some point your practice is going to be tied into how much you are spending, whether, you know, you're in private practice or you work for an institution or whatever. So I think those are the key teaching points. Hopefully that's helpful for you. Thank you.